Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
care.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast powered by Bet Online, Monday, November 14th, recapping all things NFL Week 10 and giving you the look ahead lines and some of our initial feelings for NFL Week 11. I am Todd Furman, and I'll be joined in just a matter of seconds by the incomparable Payne Insider. Hopefully, Bet the Board listeners were able to click the website and cash in on the Philadelphia Eagles, yet another winner in a long line of successes that we've had so far this season. Payne, they didn't make it easy for us, but most importantly, they got to the window with some late heroics.
Yeah, Carson Wentz was tough to watch, but after all the mistakes, after all the errors, after a lot of missed calls, the Eagles got there. Unfortunately for our listeners, they probably did better than us this weekend, because Saturday was tough with Indiana and Tennessee. Yesterday was tough for me with Carolina, so a tough weekend for me personally.
Hey, it happens to the best of us, and I think a lot of the listeners, when they're out there paying, you know, even if we don't give them official plays, we try and at least tip our hand to the particular direction we look. But as always, we preach discipline, and we try and find the best and strongest positions to share with you. I know it doesn't make the action junkies happy, but hopefully it makes their wallets happy when all the dust settles on what should be a profitable NFL season.
Yeah, absolutely. It's been a great season for Bet the Board listeners. There's zero doubt about that. I think you have to go all the way back to Blake Bortles against the Baltimore Ravens to have an official loss charted to the Bet the Board podcast.
On the show today, we'll recap what we saw yesterday and how that impacts things moving forward, a little college football playoff discussion and the shuffle up we saw take place there, our movie review of Hacksaw Ridge, the look-ahead lines. We did have a great question come in from Russ Barber as well about how we make adjustments for injuries to some of our power numbers. And last but not least, the big game breakdown courtesy of the American Gaming Association for tonight's Monday Night Football encounter when Cincinnati on the road at the New York Football Giants. But Payne, before we jump into the meat and potatoes of the show, we have an upcoming schedule change surrounding our holiday show next week for Thanksgiving.
Yep, we are going, as we usually do, with one podcast for Thanksgiving week. We know a lot of you are going to be traveling, so we're going to try to get this out at some point on Tuesday of next week. So no Monday podcast, no Thursday podcast, just one podcast out on Tuesday will be available for you guys to listen to on SoundCloud, iTunes, download while you're traveling to your Thanksgiving destination.
And of course, if you're not following Bet the Board podcast, I encourage you to do so. The official Twitter account, sign up for those newsletters. That way you'll know exactly when it drops. And you'll have the podcast in hand if you happen to be traveling for the holiday, spending time with loved ones. You obviously want a few winners to make that Thanksgiving holiday just a little bit more enjoyable. And Payne, let's get started with the three biggest matchups yesterday and some of the major takeaways. May as well go with the Sunday nighter, where I think the Seahawks' victory going into Gillette on a short week surprised not only casual fans and the folks that cover this for the business, but also ourselves. Seattle 31-24, not quite sure what we make of New England's play calling sequence from the 1 yard line in the game's waning seconds, but Seattle gets that outright victory as a 7.5 point underdog, which I'm sure Dave Mason was running naked through the streets wherever he called home.
The bye week seemed, at least from my eyes, to have a negative impact on New England, and we've talked about the bye week since the new CBA, and it's been a money burner ATS-wise, but you think maybe with the Patriots, Bill Belichick, and what they do scheme-wise, it's a benefit. But they looked a step slow. They were getting off the line of scrimmage slow. Their timing was way off. The way they were running plays was way off. Brady didn't seem to have much chemistry with a few of his receivers. I think that's fixable. I do. I think the offense is fixable. But what I saw from the Patriots defense last night, that's the concern to me. We know they've struggled getting after the quarterback. They're dead last in adjusted sack rate, and it puts a lot of pressure on their corners. We saw Belichick kind of just grasping at straws here. He was rushing two guys, dropping nine. It was brutal, and I think I wanted to go back. I looked this morning. I saw Seattle only averaged like 3.7 yards per rush attempt. But to me, I was watching the line of scrimmage battle, and they were just kind of mauling that Patriots front. So that was a concern to me as well. And you have to think there's probably, you know, some lingering effects with some trades. Guys didn't love that with Collins being shipped to Cleveland. So that'll be interesting to monitor moving forward.
I wanted to ask you about his absence. The Patriots give up 420 total yards. Jamie Collins cleaned up some of the things that would take place. But you watch that game, and the one constant for me was C.J. Procise. No matter where they lined him up, in the flat, sending him on wheel routes for a big play late, New England seemed to have no answers for him defensively whatsoever. I mean, are those the kind of things you can solve moving forward, or will this be an issue that New England is faced with, maybe not having linebackers capable of covering scat backs in space that other teams will be able to try and exploit?
Yeah, Procise is a little bit different beast. We know he's a converted receiver at Notre Dame. That's why he was drafted so early, and you know, both of us have kind of really liked him. But Jamie Collins is the missing ingredient to that. He was fantastic in coverage, whether it was tight ends over the middle or running backs out of the backfield. So I think it's going to be a huge loss. And I know we'll never question Bill Belichick and what he got in return, you know, a third-round draft pick to a guy that you potentially weren't going to be re-signing in a couple of months makes sense. But when you're on this championship run, it's tough to kind of remove a guy from the cog and kind of ruin some chemistry that defense had.
As much as we want to try and knock the Patriots for that performance, obviously the Seahawks deserve a ton of credit. Short week coming across the country. Russell Wilson looks to be nearly 100% or something close to it. Dropped a lot of beautiful passes, whether it was touch, whether it was throwing the ball with pace. Clearly trusting that ankle, knee, whatever ailed him, the peck. We saw Seattle's defense show signs of improvement with Cam Chancellor back there erasing mistakes, forcing a key turnover on Julian Edelman. Is this the kind of performance we've been waiting to see from Seattle? They put it together for 60 minutes and remind us why they're one of the front runners in the NFC.
This might be the best performance of the entire NFL season. You talk about playing that late game Monday night, traveling across the country. This is a defense that had spent just loads of time on the field the last 3 weeks, averaged over 80 defensive snaps the last 3 weeks. You do get Cam Chancellor back, so that was a nice addition. He's kind of the heart of that defense. And honestly, that first hit really took Gronk out of the game. Really changed the complex of that game. You saw Gronk kind of alligator arm a few, dropped a few after that point. Cam Chancellor is a just tone setter. So that was huge having him back. But again, you're still without Michael Bennett, causing ruckus on that defensive line. So this was a great performance. I know Super Bowl revenge, and that was an angle that a lot of people uncovered, but I just thought there was more factors to that game than just saying Super Bowl revenge. But man, Russell Wilson absolutely looks much healthier, still not running a ton. So the ankles, you know, are getting better, not 100% yet. Once he adds that element into the game where he's able to run as well, could be lights out. He was fantastic in the pocket, passing the ball, just dropped dimes all night long.
I do think there were a couple instances where he could have taken off and had modest gains, but elected to keep his eyes trained down the field and obviously turned him into much bigger plays, probably 5-7 yard scrambles in the 10-15 yard play. So it'll be interesting to see if he has some more designed runs, but they'll nurse him back to safety a little bit at a time. Of course, Seattle's opponent this coming week, the Philadelphia Eagles. The Eagles with probably their best win of the season over the Atlanta Falcons, a game that we saw move all over the place with the Eagles 2-point underdogs when we recorded on Thursday, ultimately closing 1-point favorites. But Philadelphia yet again playing at home. It was the defense that rose to the occasion to shut down the league's most potent offense.
That defense at home seems to just be a different beast. Get them away from home, you know, they look a little bit average, but right now it's the most efficient defense overall in the NFL. Jim Schwartz, we've been kind of giving him praise all season long, and he did it again. But I will say Atlanta, just a little bit different away from the dome. Tevin Coleman, they're really missing him. But for me, it was the ground game of the offense that really kind of put their mark, their stamp on this game. Surprised Doug Peterson didn't rely on that ground game just a little bit more, too, in certain situations.
Yeah, Ryan Matthews, absolutely incredible. Ran with a sense of purpose. I know you and I are both typically critical of his, well, we'll call it what it is, his West Coast running style and inability to go between the tackles. I will say that Doug Peterson, who said he wanted to use Darren Sproles with limited touches, kind of threw that out the window, knowing how the ageless wonder really put pressure on Atlanta's linebacking core, not only catching balls out of the backfield, but even getting some touches running the football between the tackles.
Yeah, and for me, I was late in that game where Philadelphia was up trying to sustain a couple drives. They picked up 6 yards on first down in a late drive, 3 yards on second down, and then had Wentz pass on third and one. That had me scratching my head because you look across the board, they had rushed for over 200 yards at that point, a combination of Smallwood, the rookie from West Virginia, and the aforementioned Matthews, just ground and pound. Still wasn't overly impressed with Wentz. I know the completion percentage looked good, but there's some throws he's missing. Again, there was a couple drops there, some critical drops right before half with Matthews there, potentially setting them up in field goal range. Sturgis wasn't great. So I think we overcame a lot to get that Eagles win home. Fortunately, it cashed for us and our listeners.
One last thing, and I know a lot of people are waiting for the wheels to fall off the Atlanta Falcons. We did see something that you probably won't see ever again through at least the course of this season. Julio Jones dropping a ball right in his breadbasket with a chance to move the chains. Do we see things in that particular spot that have us concerned about Atlanta?
Initially, I said I'm going to kind of just hold judgment on the Falcons. We saw them start slow, start fast last year, and then kind of just, implode down the stretch. I get a different vibe from this Falcons team. I think they're getting a lot of protection up front. The play calling has been fantastic. They're not moving Matt Ryan around a ton at this age, which I thought was a dumb move last year. Shanahan's really, really done a great job keeping him in the pocket, keeping him protected, making throws that are fantastic. Made a great throw deep to Gabriel with some pressure in his face. So, no, I don't really think the Falcons are going to go anywhere at this point. They really didn't lose a lot of traction with the Saints losing as well and the Panthers losing. So I think they're going to be fine, especially if you get them in that dome where they love to play. The defensive side of the ball is what's going to need to make some vast improvements if this team really wants to take that next step and be a contender. There's a ton of young guys that they drafted, and I think that's going to be the key. Can Jones, can Neal take that next step in the second half of the season? And really all you need to do, it's just become an average defense. They're below average right now. To take that next step, just become average. And I think the Atlanta Falcons really become a contender in the NFC.
Well, one defense that looks to have taken a step forward, they weren't great yesterday, but they did enough to get the victory in hostile territory, the Dallas Cowboys. I continue to be skeptical of what this team is capable of doing. They proved to get a gritty win against the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Payne, rather than highlight the Cowboys and making big throws at big junctures of the game, what's our lasting takeaway from ill-advised penalties and undisciplined football? I guess this is what we should expect.
Yeah, to touch on the Steelers first, Tomlin feels like a guy that needs to be the smartest guy in the room. He needs to come up with something or try so hard to be different. And so really not taking those extra points, put them in weird situations throughout the course of the game. It became that snowball effect. You don't take the one here, you don't take the one there. Now you're chasing it throughout the course of the game based on score and time. So that was horrific. We have heard players, specifically Ben, come out and say, we kind of practice too hard. Guys are getting beat up too much at practice. Now the secondary is a mess. It hasn't been addressed in multiple off seasons. It's still a mess. One thing that we talked about last week is, and we kind of brought it to the public side a little bit, is the explosive plays. And that's really where this game turned on its head. Trailing late in the third quarter, Dallas has a 3rd and 11. You kind of just throw up a prayer, let Dez come down with it for a 50-yard strike. Now, you don't want to take anything away from the throw and catch, but you're blitzing on 3rd and 11, a QB that has wheels. You're leaving single man outside with no safety help. It's just piss poor coaching there. You want to make a guy like Dak read, react, go through progressions on 3rd and 11, not just have him throw a jump ball up on a one-on-one situation where he doesn't really have to read. So another explosive play in that game. You have Dallas pinned back in their own end facing a 2nd and 18, and Zeke kind of shoots out of a cannon there on an 83-yard screen pass. So it was the explosive plays that really flipped this game on its head.
And when we look at this Dallas team, you mentioned some of the explosive plays. Cowboys are clearly here to stay. I think all of us who thought that maybe wheels might come off, I mean, what is this team ceiling? Do we think that the dynamic tandem of rookies between Zeke Elliott and Dak Prescott can give them, which looks like they have an inside track for home field advantage through the NFC, and ultimately lead them to a Super Bowl championship?
listen, when we did the quarter poll of contenders and pretenders, I made the Cowboys a contender, and I didn't want to jinx them, so I haven't mentioned this, but Rod Marinelli, the defensive coordinator, he has consistently the last two seasons done more with less. A slew of injuries, a slew of suspensions. We know Dak and Zeke, the craze train that's gone on around them, and yes, they deserve a ton of credit, but it's this Cowboys defense. And when you look at this stat, I saw this come across my desk. We are now in the NFL of pass happy and inflated numbers. They have not allowed a running back to go for 100 yards all season. And until yesterday, Antonio Brown went for 154. They had not allowed a receiver to go for 100 yards. And so, to me, it was a shocking stat. And I know Antonio Brown, I think he had like 47 yards at halftime. So there was a real shot that, you know, they went 10 weeks without allowing a 100-yard rusher or receiver, which was super impressive to me. Obviously, Brown goes for 154, has the big second half. But Rod Marinelli and that defense not getting enough credit.
And that 154, too, should come with an asterisk. I believe Antonio Brown picked up about 35 or 40 of those yards when Dallas dropped everybody into a Hail Mary prevent on the final play of the game. So, you right. know, there is some noise in that particular number. One thing we talked about here, Payne, and then we'll close the book on the three biggest games, two-point conversions and Mike Tomlin. Wanted to get your thoughts real quick on Pete Carroll's decision. I know he took a lot of heat on Twitter, could care less what social media and some of the other journalists think about it. Up seven late in that game, electing to go for two to try and put it on ice rather than taking the extra point with Hauschka and making it an eight-point game.
It's a decision that we've kind of talked about, and I know we traded text throughout the course of the season. And I'm like, why aren't coaches doing this? Like, it makes sense. Like, you need 2 yards, and 2 yards makes it a two-possession game. And in that specific situation, you're looking at a team that's in the Seattle that's known to be aggressive. Pete Carroll likes to punch you in the mouth. He likes to run it up. And this didn't really have a run-it-up situation to it, but with 4 minutes to go, your offense has been successful. Belichick's defense is on its heels. 2 yards ends the game. That's it. 2 yards, makes it 9 points, makes it two possession, game over. And on the flip side of that, you really don't run a huge risk because you know the opposing team isn't going for two. So if you don't get it, it's still seven. You know the opposing team, if they do happen to score a touchdown, is kicking the point after. They're not going for two. And so in that situation, again, let's just say you kick the point after, you make it eight. Are you really saying, like, my defense is going to be overly successful? Long-term sample size stopping Brady and Belichick from the two-yard line? Probably not. Well, I think that was a great call, a ballsy call, and it ends the game right there, just obtaining 2-3 yards.
Little did we know Seattle was going to be successful stopping Brady from the two-yard line with the late goal line stand, but definitely understand where you're coming from, having a chance to win it with your offense right there and really changing the win probability substantially rather than just a few percentage points. Disappointment-wise, four teams that I think had major Super Bowl aspirations coming into the year, all struggling right now, Payne. The Packers we saw against the Titans never really get off the bus. They were down 3 touchdowns, what felt like almost immediately. The Minnesota Vikings showed some fight, spotted the Redskins a 14-0 lead, took a 2014 lead in the half, and then the offense bogged down for much of the second half. The Arizona Cardinals, they won, but they were 14-point favorites and needed last-minute heroics to get through the dreadful San Francisco 49ers. And, of course, maybe the most disappointing side, a team that looked like they had resurrected their entire season against a good opponent, falling apart in the second half with the Carolina Panthers blowing a massive lead against Kansas City. Which one of those teams, in your opinions, was most disappointing?
I think you look at the Packers for one. I have not watched the All-22 yet, but you told me that they basically quit. Didn't get off the bus, so I kind of put that game on the back burner, want to watch it. But to me, if you just come out and you're not playing and you basically quit from the opening snap, you're not going to get my attention there. The Vikings loss was a tough one. We know they're just so beat up, banged up. They had a great opportunity there. Blair Walsh continues to struggle mentally after that playoff miss. Not sure what they're going to do there. The offensive line is just a train wreck. We saw Jake Long go down late in that game at left tackle, so that could be another injury to monitor. But for me, the two biggest disappointments were the Cardinals off the bye week, making that much closer than it needed to be. And then the Panthers. That game may have ended their season. It really might have just completely derailed what we thought could be potentially a good comeback.
Yeah, I think when you look at Carolina, it'll be interesting to read some of the player quotes and how they approach that Thursday night game. But Payne, you mentioned, we talked about the Packers-Titans game. This is all you need to know about this game, and I'm curious to know what you'll find when you review it. Tennessee's first three offensive drives of the game, one play, 80-yard touchdown, seven plays, 85-yard touchdown, nine plays, 71-yard touchdown drive, 21-0 before the end of the first quarter. So Green Bay showed a little bit of fight getting back into the game, but clearly their season hanging in the balance. We hear Aaron Rodgers come out this morning, and I'll read his quote directly from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. "There has to be that healthy fear as a player. If you don't do your job, they'll get rid of you. I think we've all got to go back, and that urgency's got to pick up. The focus has got to pick up. We've all got to play better, and that starts with me." Maybe the first time, despite their 4-5 start, that we're seeing Aaron Rodgers actually making himself accountable for some of the Packers' struggles.
No more relax. Big game, I know, ahead this weekend, but for the Titans, this is a team that a lot of professionals liked coming into the season. They weren't sure about Malarkey. They're now just a win away from eclipsing their season win total of 5.5. And one thing I will say, Marcus Mariota hasn't been great this season, despite a lot of the touchdown numbers. He was impressive this week, took advantage of that beat-up Packers secondary when I watched here and there. Haven't, again, watched the All-22. But the big thing for me is Mike Malarkey. We know what he wanted to do coming into the season, which was ground and pound. He was literally like a bland piece of food. He was like white rice. But all of a sudden, you watch what he's doing offensively. He's maybe doused that white rice with a little crystal hot sauce. There's something interesting to that offense that he's doing. But again, I think the most disappointing performance of the entire week has to come with the Carolina Panthers. I know we were on them, laid the three. And when you really break down that game, I watched it live. I watched it again later that evening. They were up 17-3 late in that game. They're going for a three-possession lead. They had a first and 10 from the KC-20. And Cam Newton, the following three plays, a one-yard loss on a first-down QB keeper, takes a 7-yard sack on second down, takes a 12-yard sack on third down. It was a 20-play drive that ended in a punt. It was a total deflator. And when you talk about Cam, emotionally, we kind of said last week, he's a bit of a train wreck right now. Mr. Calm, Mr. Cool, Mr. Collected Cam Newton later throws the pick six. And if you look at his season numbers, he has been horrific under pressure. He had a 4.2 passer rating this week when there was pressure in his face. All year long, he has been horrific when there's pressure on.
And this is a guy who may need to look himself in the mirror. We talked about Aaron Rodgers just a few seconds ago being accountable for some of Green Bay's struggle. I think Cam has to take a lion's share of the responsibility. But as we said, that division, not exactly a formality with Atlanta running away with it. So Carolina, a big game on short week against the New Orleans Saints. They lose that game clearly. They can start packing up their lockers because they won't be playing football well into January. College football playoff pain, we saw a little bit of a shuffle at the top this past weekend. The number two team goes down. Number three team goes down. Number four team goes down. Number four, obviously, the most likely upset victim with Washington taking on USC. I don't think anybody, ourselves included, saw Iowa knocking off Michigan as nearly 24-point underdogs, or Pittsburgh going into Death Valley and upsetting Clemson, catching 21. We know Alabama is the number one team in the country. I think you and I share a similar mindset that 2A and 2B are Ohio State and Louisville. But do we think both of those teams, given some of the obstacles ahead, are actually going to have a chance to even play in the college football playoff unless they get some external help?
I'm not sure, and that's unfortunate because right now it's Alabama and everybody else, and this would be the crucial time when there's kind of this jumbled mess to lean on Vegas, to lean on odds makers, and pick the following best three. And I think you would be looking at Louisville, Ohio State, Clemson. And for me, it's about the quarterback. All three of those teams have a capable leader. And this isn't to take a crap on Michigan because they've
played fantastic this year. No, you can't. They gained 203 yards against the Iowa Hawkeyes.
They're horrific.
203 yards offensively. I know Kinnick's a tough place to play at night, but that Iowa defense had shown nothing. So I think Michigan, water finally met its level with the Wolverines, and I was sick and tired of hearing about this team offensively and what they were capable of doing. So go ahead, and you can take shots at them all you want. For what they are.
I mean, for 2 years, like, I get where we're going. Like, I get Harbaugh's awesome, and I get the direction they're headed, and they've gotten there fast. They've rebounded quickly, and they have that punch-you-in-the-face feel. But there's nothing they do offensively that's good. I mean, they run right down your throat, and it's because they're facing a bunch of dregs in the Big Ten. Like, if you think that style is going to work against Alabama, you're going to lose by 50. And I kid you not, 50. Like, Jabril Peppers is awesome. I get that. He's going to be a fantastic outside linebacker. But when you don't have a semblance of an offensive weapon and you rely on a guy who's an outside linebacker making trick plays for you, we've been talking about this for 2 years, your offense stinks. There's not a lot of weapons. It's going to change because Harbaugh decided to recruit the state of Florida pretty heavily, so he's going to start getting some athletes. But at this point, it shocks me that there's not somebody in the state of Michigan that doesn't run a 4-4. Like, you can't find one guy that runs a 4-4 and stick him on offense?
I mean, it's definitely been a struggle. You look at their lack of athletes, and you said, not a whole lot of creativity on the offensive side, whether it's on the road, and they wanted to go more conservative. Clearly a team that I don't have pegged as top four. The other team, you said it, you said they were barely a fringe top 10 team, let alone a college football playoff-worthy team, the Washington Huskies. I know they're beat up on defense, but the one takeaway for me, Jake Browning and very little arm strength, and against elite-level athletes like we saw in that USC secondary, couldn't do much to stretch the field. Washington couldn't get on track with the ground game. And I think USC deserves full marks for their performance, because I wanted to ship Clay Helton out of town the way they had started the season. But USC went up there, and they hit Washington in the mouth, winning in a very difficult place to play as a 9.5-point underdog.
USC found its quarterback. They're going to stick with him. It's created some stability on offense. The defense has been fantastic. The last 6 weeks, you could say USC might be the second best team in college football. And when you look at what they're doing in the trenches, a team that could potentially compete with Alabama, I think you kind of throw out that early season head-to-head matchup with Alabama, because USC right now is playing some of the best football in the entire country. Washington, yeah, I mean, we had them rated ninth best team power-wise. They hadn't faced a soul. Their best win was probably at that point on the road at Utah, required, you know, some special teams heroics from Pettis in that game. But Jake Browning, you know, very accurate, but yeah, the arm strength not there. I think I read a quote after that game from the coaching staff that said, you know, it's tough to beat an opposing team when your pitcher doesn't have his fastball going today. And so, as you alluded to, it was his arm strength was highly in question there. I think when you look at the rest of the picture, and I know a lot of people won't agree with this, and I get that you can't just move teams up and say, like, this is where they're power rated if they're not performing on the field. But right now, I mean, LSU for us, we have them rated above a team like Washington. Florida State with three losses, again, we still would have them like power rated on a neutral field. You know, they'd be a favorite over a team like Wisconsin who controls their own destiny, you know?
Well, I think it was an absolute travesty when you talk about LSU, how far they fell in the polls. I mean, they went in there and they played Alabama as tough as anybody, ultimately dropped that game 10-0, but to see them barely in as a fringe top 25 team, absolutely laughable, with people becoming enamored what they've seen last. There's a reason LSU is an overwhelming favorite this weekend when Florida comes to town. There's a reason Florida State is an overwhelming favorite against the Florida Gators for that game that'll take place in 2 weeks. And when we look at this, I know, Payne, I take a bunch of heat because I say Louisville deserves to be included over Clemson because I make them a favorite on a neutral field. Yes, head-to-head is great, but Louisville doesn't have the bad loss that Clemson now has on their resume. Clemson should have lost against NC State. And when you come up 3 yards short in a road game where the number is right around a pick 'em, I'm not going to take anything away from you. Problem that I think Louisville will deal with is folks looking at their resume going, where is their marquee victory? Beating Florida State as convincingly as they did goes a long way. You mentioned Wisconsin. That team, I love what they do defensively. They don't have a quarterback. They would get absolutely blasted by most of these teams with dynamic signal callers. And don't even get me started with Penn State, who's going to slide up in the college football rankings. They may be as high as 6, 7. People laughed at me when I went on air last week across the country and they asked me what my number was for Alabama, and I'm sure it's a little bit higher where the market would open. I said I made Alabama a 24-point favorite against Penn State on a neutral field.
Yeah, that's probably pretty close. That's pretty close. And for me, wanting the best games possible, I think you have to have a team that has a quarterback to compete with Bama, because on any given night, that star quarterback could have a great game and propel your team to victory. We saw that last year with Clemson in the national championship game. A just great single-man performance from their quarterback. And when you look at the landscape, you talk about Louisville, Ohio State, Clemson. Now, JT Barrett, not great through the air, but he's been there before. He's a leader at quarterback. So for me, I'd want to see Alabama, Louisville, Ohio State, Clemson, all teams with great quarterback play. and they aren't very light in the trenches. So I think they can compete. And again, you get that one game performance from a stud quarterback, and you could knock off Alabama. For me, I agree. I do have Louisville power rated above Clemson, but we all look for that head-to-head matchup, and I get there's a home field advantage at Clemson, but I'm not sure you can put Louisville ahead of Clemson just because of that matchup. We all look for this. We all look for that head-to-head matchup, and we never get it because these teams don't really play each other. But I don't think you can just kind of throw that to the side where Clemson beat them straight up.
It should be interesting. Of course, those numbers will come out Tuesday night as we get closer to knowing exactly what four teams will vie for the College Football National Championship. I think the only thing, Payne, that could really throw this into even more chaos than we already have is if Alabama were to lose as about an 18-point favorite against Auburn in the Iron Bowl and follow that up with a loss against Florida in the SEC Championship. That could make things very interesting.
That would create chaos.
I don't think that's a scenario we see, but it could be fun to think about. If you're not already following us on Twitter, it's never too late to get started. The podcast, follow it at BetTheBoardPod. Check out BetTheBoardPodcast.com. You can follow Payne on Twitter as well, at Payne Insider. You can follow me at Todd Furman. All sorts of great swag, too. Limited supplies remain. Nothing says you love your loved ones like buying them some Bet the Board paraphernalia to stuff those stockings, take care of the early Hanukkah presents, whatever holidays you celebrate, celebrate with Bet the Board. Payne, movie review time, and this 2 weeks ago I was extremely critical of Inferno. Last week we saw Hacksaw Ridge, where I think Andrew Garfield did an outstanding job in the role. Wanted to get your thoughts, because you know I have some pretty strong feelings about this movie.
So not to go backwards, but I'm just exiting out of this Excel sheet right we have right now for power numbers. Florida State would be about a 5.5-point favorite on a neutral over Penn State.
And I think that's a little bit light if you want my honest opinion.
Yeah. I would expect some sharp money on Florida State in that situation. But to Hacksaw Ridge, definitely worth the time and the money to go see. I think it was one of the better movies that we've watched this entire year. I know I always kind of tend to gravitate and enjoy movies more when they're based on true stories, true events. Hacksaw Ridge was no different. Enjoyed the interviews of the real characters at the end. Thought it added a nice touch. So I really suggest going to see this movie.
Yeah, I think from an entertainment standpoint, it may not be up there with The Accountant, and I like War Dogs quite a bit. From a true cinematic presentation and a movie, I think this was probably one of the best ones that we've seen so far this football season. The storyline definitely, you know, pulls at those heartstrings a little bit. You really feel a connection with the character and some of the struggles he had to endure. I think Vince Vaughn did an outstanding job in a supporting role, something we're not used to seeing him in, playing a little bit more serious, but you did have that comedic feeling to it with him as, I don't even know, I'm going to butcher the Army terminology. What was he, the corporal or the platoon commander, Payne? I'll admit this is where a little bit above my pay grade.
Yeah. And it was interesting, the development of his character went from, we're going to break this dude down, to quickly kind of understanding him a little bit. So I thought that was a good dynamic added throughout the course of that movie. So you definitely want to see Hacksaw Ridge. For whatever reason, though, it was shocking. I went to go see this movie. They had it in the small theater. It was like,
I just don't know if it's,
I don't know how the ratings were. I didn't look at the box office numbers its initial week, but it was like already week two in like the small theater.
Yeah, I just don't know if it's a movie that's going to resonate and really be a huge box office success. I'll say that I know the critics were extremely high on it, but when I look at, you know, some of the numbers, it was what, fifth in the box office this weekend behind Doctor Strange. Yeah, that did 43 million. Trolls 35 million. Arrival 24. Almost Christmas 15.6, and Hacksaw Ridge a shade under 11 million, but definitely think it's a movie worth watching, especially if anybody out there listening loves some of those war movies. Great story. And as you mentioned, Payne, you can see the character develop and show different ways to provide bravery in the face of adversity, not through the traditional sense. What movie do we have on tap this week? It looks a little bit light. I know we're getting right around that Thanksgiving and Christmas holiday window where I feel like they flood us with movies. I don't even know which direction we want to go. Do we open this up to our loyal listeners to decide?
It looks bleak right now. I went through the movies late last night, and I was like, oof. My feeling is they will probably vote Arrival, but I'll send out options later this afternoon on Twitter. We'll let the loyal Bet the Board listeners have their say and determine the direction we had of movie choices this week.
I have a feeling Doctor Strange may be a bit of a dark horse if we were going to call it a two-horse race. So interested to get your thoughts. Obviously, as always, if you guys see a movie and it's one that Payne and I haven't addressed, feel free to tweet it to us, Bet the Board Pod or either of us individually. We'd love to hear your guys' suggestions on some of the things that hit the silver screen. NFL Week 11, Payne. Cowboys-Ravens, look-ahead number here. Dallas, a 6.5-point favorite. Obviously, we've seen the market respond a bit, given a national audience that saw Dallas go into Pittsburgh and win that game as a 2.5-3-point underdog. Total in this game has also ticked up at BetOnline from 43.5, where it opened, out to 45. But right now, you're looking at the Cowboys, a full touchdown favorite, and as the aforementioned, total of 45 at BetOnline.
How could you not like Dallas here? I think is probably...
love the Cowboy! Love the Cowboy!
Is probably going to be the initial thought here. I probably going to wait on this one a little bit. So, I'm probably going to wait on this game. Probably leaks above a touchdown. I can kind of see that some places right now. I know one of the sharper books is dealing the hook at a price. I would think... the public gravitates toward Dallas. Probably would have liked this game to be in the 4 p.m. time slot there, so we would have got some of that chase money on the Cowboys. But I think eventually, at some point, the price will be right and probably make a case for the dog at some point.
And this will definitely be a game that we talk about in greater detail on Thursday. And, of course, Dallas will get our undivided attention next Tuesday when they host the annual Thanksgiving Clash. Redskins, Packers, Payne, Sunday Night Football, a game that's taken on added importance, not only given Aaron Rodgers' comments, but the Washington Redskins, who have figured things out quite a bit. Look ahead number here had the Redskins a 1.5-point favorite. Right now, as I'm looking at our screen, seeing BetOnline list the Redskins as a 2.5-point chalk. You do have to lay $1.20. Total in this game, 50, but there are plenty of threes elsewhere in the market. Playoff revenge on the mind of the Washington Redskins, but the Green Bay Packers season hanging in the balance.
I think, you know, the NFL got it right again. This is going to be a very good Sunday Night Football game. Saw this open as low as Redskins -2. Now out to 3 a lot of places. I think when you look at this game matchup-wise, you're going to think Washington probably has some edges there in the passing game. We know that Green Bay secondary is banged up, beat up, so there could be some opportunities there for that Washington offense. On the flip side of this coin, I think we do see a game effort. You kind of read word for word the quotes of Aaron Rodgers, and so I think this is kind of a last stand spot for Green Bay. The injury situations is another one that you're going to have to watch out for. We know the suspension to Williams at left tackle for the Redskins, probably the best left tackle in football. The wide receiver situation with DeSean Jackson, we know he missed last week. I heard whispers he could potentially miss this week. Green Bay could be getting some guys back on defense, so the injuries are definitely going to have to be something you monitor from now. Again, we're doing this Monday morning, so there's going to be a lot changing not only from now to Sunday, but from now to Thursday when we rejoin each other and break down the Thursday edition of Bet the Board.
Interested to see where the market goes here. And one of the biggest moves based on a team that didn't even play this past week was the Oakland Raiders, who traveled down to Mexico City to take on the Houston Texans. Look ahead number here had the Raiders listed as modest field goal favorites. But the Houston Texans now see themselves at BetOnline as a 5-point underdog. Total on this game, 46.5. Houston, we know, is extremely banged up on defense. Went into Jacksonville, though, and gutted out a win despite professional money coming in on the Jags fast and furious. A little bit surprised to see a 2.5-point move through two key numbers, given that the Oakland Raiders didn't even take to the field on Sunday.
Crown them. Crown them champions, baby. It's the Oakland Raiders. I mean... It's the market. It's what we're going to see. We did, going back to Sunday's game, the Jaguars were uber sharp. Super sharp money. We did see some buyback. I did see another group take 3 right at kick. The big thing here, though, is the injury concerns for the Houston Texans defense. And that was partly why we saw that early steam. This Houston team has a trouble stopping the run. Vince Wilfork was out last week, didn't practice all week. He did travel, so it'll be interesting to see if he makes the trip to Mexico. And right now, quietly, we know K Kevin Johnson, the young kid they drafted out of Wake Forest, he's been out. He's out for the season with the Liz Frank injury, so that's a blow to that Houston secondary. But it becomes a bigger blow now when AJ, I'm going to butcher his last name, Abuye, was also out.
Abuye.
Yes, he was also out.
Yeah,
this week.
Booyah, our Stuart Scott tribute.
Yep. And right now, he is, through 10 weeks, the number one rated cornerback in the NFL. So that is going to be a huge loss. So if you can't stop the run, and we know how great this Oakland offensive line is, and you can't potentially stop the pass, we know Carr's got some weapons there. This could be a tough battle. So for me, I see the line move here, and I'm saying, you know, probably some lost value here, but I'm certainly not running to back Houston in this spot.
I know we'll talk about it, too, in greater detail with the travel situation and some of the wrinkles that throws in here, given unfamiliar surroundings down there in Mexico City. Do you think that can have a positive or negative impact on a team like Oakland coming off of a bye versus Houston? We know the proximity, but still traveling a little bit further than they would like on a short week?
Yeah, it's certainly, you know, both these teams are going to have to deal with the travel. Now, it'll be interesting to see the fan support. I think right now, Oakland, you know, everyone's raving about them. But you'd think probably, just due to proximity, a slight home field advantage for Houston here. Vacation for potential fans. Get away, have some nice frosty beverages, some nice, you know, whatever else is you like to indulge in. So probably a small home field advantage here. Don't love, you know, the 2.5-point loss in value based upon, you know, the Raiders' primetime Sunday night performance 2 weeks ago. But again, this might be a game because of that inflated price on Oakland. And because I really don't like the Houston Texans, I just sit this one out completely.
There's a good possibility that if opportunity doesn't present itself, no reason to jump in. And, of course, we will preview that Houston-Oakland game this Thursday with the schedule change given the holiday podcast. No podcast next Monday. We'll record everything for your Thanksgiving feast next Tuesday. Give that a little bit more time to breathe. Payne, we did get one question. It actually came in late last week. Didn't have a chance to get to it on the Thursday podcast from one of our longtime loyal listeners, Russ Barber. Goes by @TheMinster5 on Twitter. And I'm going to paraphrase this because it was a couple tweet question asking about adjustments for players in terms of injuries and how we try and factor that into our equation to quantify it before the market does. I knew you read into it, and I don't want to, you know, go off the beaten path, but talk about a college injury for smaller schools that we talked about between the two of us. About a school like Middle Tennessee State, they lose a starting quarterback in Brent Stockstill, a program-changing type talent. The market only responds 3.5 points. I told you I thought the market probably should have responded closer to 2 touchdowns. We don't see anything close to that in the National Football League, but we see it all the time. You lose a cornerback. You mentioned the Houston Texans, no Kevin Johnson and no A.J. Boye. The Jets losing a center like Nick Mangold. Quarterbacks gain the headlines. Skilled position players people love for fantasy at running back and wide receiver. But what are some of the other positions, and maybe even a name or two, not tipping your whole hand, guys that really move the needle when you're handicapping these games?
Well, that was a pretty good question. I think you probably touched on everything that we need to right there. I think for us, when it comes to injuries, is what's the value of the player, obviously, and then what's the perceived market value of the player. So, you know, 2 weeks ago we had the Big Ben situation. And kind of to put numbers into perspective and not go too far back, we saw when Pittsburgh was going to face New England, the look-ahead line was Pittsburgh -1, and that was with a healthy Big Ben. He doesn't end up being healthy, doesn't end up playing the game. The market adjusted, and New England was a 7.5-point favorite. So about an 8.5-point adjustment through the 3 through the 7. So you could say Big Ben was worth potentially 10 points. And so then you kind of fast forward to where he plays against Baltimore, and we talked about it on this podcast. If he plays, this is going to be a benefit to our side because, yes, we think Big Ben's valuable, but what is his value at 60% is really what he was. So for us, it's just such a, you know, there's so many prongs, there's so many arms to this question. So, A, I think we will obviously find value if we see a player like a center that doesn't really get perceived in the market, but really is a big deal because they're getting their offensive line adjusted. They're getting protection settled. They're helping call out the mic for their quarterback. There's that chemistry there between quarterback and center in the exchange process. So that's a position that doesn't get valued really into the market a ton, but the wise guys really value it. Or you're getting quarterback perception where in your college reference, there wasn't, you know, enough put on the quarterback injury situation, or in the situation of Baltimore, Pittsburgh, where there was too much based upon health. And then obviously, I think the last part to this question was, you know, injury before it's reflected in the line, where, you know, we talk about this all the time. Sometimes we are going to get injury information well before most people have access to it. So that's part of the information. And not to, you know, put everyone at a disadvantage and say, you know, we're getting this information, you know, before everyone else. That is the instance sometimes. But there's also instances where just repetition. We know this new questionable NFL injury report. Well, we monitor that stuff. And so you kind of at this point have a sense, a vibe. You can hear what players are saying. You can read into what players are saying, read into what coaches are saying. So even though there's that questionable label, if I have a guy that hasn't practiced on Wednesday, hasn't practiced on Thursday, hasn't practiced on Friday, and has a questionable designation to him, most likely he's not playing. But if I get that same questionable designation to a player and I see he was limited on Wednesday, he was more of a full participant on Thursday, I'm going to expect him to play, and I can get out ahead of the market that way if I don't have the inside information that, you know, we get sometimes.
Yeah, and I think one thing to take it one step further, Payne, you talk about, you know, we talk about it all the time. Every matchup isn't the same. You know, a potential injury can be very different based on the opponent, given the styles of play. So while we attribute black and white values to say player X is worth 2 points, player X is worth what, you know, worth 7 points, if the matchup is different, that 7 can become a 5.5, and oftentimes around key numbers, it makes the difference between moving on a particular play or sitting on the sidelines because you don't think you have enough of an edge worth exploiting.
Absolutely. Carolina, Kansas City, to that point, you know, that was partly what put us over the top on Carolina. We really valued that Jeremy Maclin injury because that's where you have to beat the Carolina Panthers, through the air. And if you don't have that threat, well, the market might not reflect it. And we did see, you know, a market go from Carolina -3, -05 to, you know, -3, -10, and -15. There was that, you know, couple cents of value. It wasn't enough in our minds. So that's the reason, you know, partly why we ended up on Carolina this week.
Tyreek Hill, baby, 10 catches, 89 yards. Ross,
256 yards of offense on the road. Still able to come from 14 behind to win it.
How Kansas City is 2-0 over their last two games against Carolina and Jacksonville, absolutely mind-boggling to me. It almost appears that Andy Reid is pulling a Houdini-type act, showing that the Chiefs will have a regression to the mean coming soon. Hopefully we're able to profit from it. But this Kansas City team, very relevant in the AFC playoff picture. So thank you, Russ, for that question. Obviously, as you heard, Payne and I could go on for hours about this, and it is always an evolving process. And I think if we can leave you with one takeaway from a lot of the things we do on this podcast, you can have a regimented approach to trying to pick winners, but if you're not fluid and adjusting on the fly, not only to player valuations, team valuations, and everything else that goes into it, from the time you decide to enter the market at an actual bet, the way the dynamics of this whole entire industry and business will quickly leave you in its dust. On to the Monday Night Football game, Payne. Bengals and Giants, brought to us by the American Gaming Association, americangaming.org. You can follow them on Twitter, at AmerGamingASSN. It is the mission of the AGA to be the single most effective champion of the industry, relentlessly protecting against harmful and often misinformed public policies and paving a path for growth, innovation, and reinvestment. You can sign up for real-time updates, americangaming.org/about/contact. And Payne, we have seen some market movement here on the Bengals trip to the Big Apple. Total right now at BetOnline, 47.5. You do have to lay $1.15 to go over. We'll call the Bengals a pick 'em. Eh, it's a pick minus $1.13. We saw the Giants get as high as 2 before sharp money started to enter the market, looking to back prime time Andy Dalton.
Yeah. I actually saw the market open 3 in one spot on the Giants, which was interesting. We know the Giants, they're a public team, New York, obviously, and they've won 3 in a row. The last two games that they've won, they've been outgained substantially. Probably shouldn't have won those games. When you kind of start to break this down a little bit, you know, the Giants spent all that money in the offseason on Olivier Vernon. They thought JPP was getting healthier. 30th in the NFL at getting after the quarterback. And so my point here is we all like to be ball watchers. Let's watch the game within the game. And that game within the game is the defensive front for the Giants and the offensive line for the Bengals, because right now only the Vikings and Seahawks have allowed more sacks than Cincinnati. So that's going to have to be the matchup. We know the Giants aren't getting after the quarterback, and the Bengals really aren't protecting their quarterback. So that's going to be the battle within the battle right there. I believe, as we're recording this right now, Roto World confirmed Victor Cruz will be out. I think the bigger injury, though, is Justin Pugh. He's the Giants' best lineman, and right now, through this point in the season, he's graded out as the best interior offensive line in football. So huge loss there to an offensive line that's kind of underwhelming to begin with. The loss of Pugh really doesn't help their one-dimensional offense at this point. The Giants just can't run the ball. 31st in the NFL, 3.2 yards per carry. And you talk about the last 3 weeks, even worse, 2.1 yards per carry over the last 3 weeks.
When we look at some of the other matchups on the field, Payne, we know the two guys that will grab headlines. They're wide receivers, one wearing Giant blue and the other wearing Bengals tiger stripes. A.J. Green, when we look at what he's going to be faced with against that Giants defense, and Odell Beckham Jr. Against the Bengals secondary.
Well, the Bengals secondary has not been very good. The defense in general has been a massive disappointment. And this comes when you lose guys like Mike Zimmer over time, when you lose guys like Vance Joseph over time. So they just haven't been able to replicate or produce at a clip because the schemes, the coaches they've lost. And we've kind of made point of this. Marvin Lewis, we don't really like. We don't think he's very good. He kind of stumbled into some talented players because there's issues with them. He stumbled into some great coaches, but I think we're going to see this Bengals team kind of plummet here over the next few seasons. So for us, when you do some reading over the course of the bye week, there's been some internal battles going on with Marvin Lewis, with the defensive coordinator. The defensive coordinator wanted to start playing the young guys because the old guys weren't producing. Marvin Lewis steps in and said, no, we can't do that. It sets a bad precedent. They're going to have to earn their roles. So I think during this bye week, there's going to be this competition amongst the defense. And really right now, for that Giants offense, it's a one-man band. And I think that'll be, if you can kind of limit Odell Beckham Jr., limit that damn slant play that he runs so often and Eli loves throwing, and don't allow a 10-yard slant to go for 80, the Bengals are going to have some success here. I also think Eifert is the big key to this game. He came back, wasn't 100%, kind of been going through the motions a little bit. That bye week is huge for him. So I think that's the compliment over the middle to A.J. Green, the weapon that this offense has really been lacking. So I think that's a big talking point to this game, is Tyler Eifert being back, and you have a team that's not really one-dimensional. The Bengals can run it a little bit. So I think that's kind of an added bonus.
Now, I know we are extremely selective here on Bet the Board. It sounds like between the two of us, we've made a slight case for the Cincinnati Bengals. Do we want to make it an official Bet the Board endorsed investment opportunity here in prime time as we close the book on NFL Week 10?
Yeah, sure. Go for it. I think, I got a little better number. I took some points in this one, but I don't think it's significant enough where it's lost its value at Pick'em. You know, going through the zero, not a huge detriment to value there. But, I think the Bengals make a compelling case tonight at Pick'em. This kind of becomes their must-win game, and I hate to label it that, but you're getting some value. It's New York. It's the Giants. They've won three in a row. Not really sure they deserve to have won at least the last two games based upon all the metrics there. I think this is kind of a group in the Bengals where
they know their window's closing.
They do. They know the window's closing, but they're kind of guys that are emotional. And
really, a team with Vontaze Burfict is emotional?
I tried to word this properly.
Oh, here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
I wanted to word it properly. They have some emotional guys. The highs are really high. The lows are really low. And I think that bye week some team camaraderie there. I think they emotionally get up for this one. They know what's at stake here. And I think the Cincinnati Bengals make a compelling case. We've also seen, I think, you know, some sharp money hit over 47. So if you like that side, with the public going to be on the over as well, probably something. You know, if you were betting the over, I would go earlier rather than later there. But, yeah, I like the Bengals here.
And interesting here with Cincinnati, too, if you look at their schedule breakdown, this team has four losses this season, Payne. I don't think there's a bad loss anywhere in here. At the Steelers, week two. Home against the Denver Broncos, week three, I guess maybe when Trevor Siemian wasn't quite at a, you know, still learning the offense. You don't want to lose that game. At the Dallas Cowboys in week five, the loss looks better and better by the week. And they followed that up week six at the Patriots, losing that. So despite Cincinnati struggle.
You sound like a handicapper who just gave out a write-up. Now, I'm on the Bengals. I've already bet the Bengals.
I took plus two.
Take a look at the wins. The wins aren't very good.
No, the wins aren't very good either. So that's why they need their resume building win for some style points tonight.
You can write-ups are great, but you can spin them any which way you want. That's one thing that I've... That's why, like, I just think they're a crock of shit.
One of my close friends told me, he says, yeah, trends are great. You can find a trend to spin bullshit any single way you want. It'll leave you feeling warm and tingly at night, but it'll leave your wallet with a few less dollars than you started the weekend with.
Yep, absolutely. Still like the Bengals, though, despite the really tough losses and the really not-so-great wins.
Mark it down. No podcast next Monday. We will be back this coming Thursday, which I think is November 17th. I'm not really good with calendars. And then next Tuesday for the holiday edition. Of course, on Thursday, we'll have Dave Mason here to share his thoughts, how NFL Week 10 went, and what the book is looking to try and see and accomplish for NFL weekend. So for Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter, at Payne Insider. I am Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well, at Todd Furman. Of course, follow the podcast, at Bet the Board Pod. Visit BetTheBoardPodcast.com. Noah's around there. We'll have some articles going up, movie reviews, you name it, one-stop shopping. Best of luck Monday Night Football from MetLife Stadium. Root for a Bengals victory, and hopefully we'll see you at the window.